Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Google Curaleaf PA or stop by one of our 18 locations across the Commonwealth.
This is the Blue White Breakdown, the premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live. Here are your hosts, Bob Flounders and David Jones.
Dave Jones, I love when we're on the same page. We're wearing matching St. Joe's gear.
Look at this.
Yeah. I mean, that's my basketball squad. Dave knows it. Dave's a huge college hoops fan. Your shirt's way nicer than mine as we begin the Blue White Breakdown podcast. But man, I'm just glad you could throw a little support behind the Hawks, because it's been a rough go lately. Much like Northwestern, it's been a little bit of a rough go for the Hawks.
Yeah, I like Billy, but that's a tough job, man. He walked into a tough situation. He's a good dude. I've always liked him, but man, ugh, I don't know.
Dave, how about Pat Fitzgerald? I mean, where are you on him? I mean, this is...
I'm late taping because I want to watch the end of the replay.
Yeah.
it's not good, man. I mean, I think just in general, Bob, it's getting harder and harder to survive with 2- and 3-star athletes around college football. And he's done it with some sort of magic potion for a while now. But you see Wisconsin starting to fall by the wayside. You see Nebraska just not being able to cut it with those guys. And Northwestern, I mean, they have lost to 3 consecutive underdogs. And they're not good football teams. You're talking about Duke.
Southern Illinois.
Southern Illinois, the Salukis. That's a Walt Frazier school.
By the Glide.
Not a Dick Butkus school. And then this last game against Miami of Ohio, just, ugh. I mean, I'm watching it. It's just basic breakdowns. The game is 7-0 going into the half. They've already botched a potential TD drive with a fumble. But it's still, you know, they still got the lead. And then they don't recognize a very apparent punt block that Miami has on. And the two guards in the middle of the formation just release and run upfield, and they get gang rushed by like 6 guys that the protectors can't handle. I mean, that is basic stuff that it's not really about athletes. It's just about dysfunction. And there were fumbles. There were other stuff that happened. Ryan Helinski looked really good at the start of the game. For those who don't know, he is a 4-star, borderline 5-star quarterback that they got who transferred in a couple years ago. Did not perform well initially, but had looked good against Nebraska. If you saw the Ireland game, he looked good in this game. He hit 13 of his first 16 passes. It's not like they don't have skill players. They do. Evan Hall is a really good little bumper car type of feature back. Who is low to the ground and keeps his balance and is a problem. Eric Clare, they got like 3 of those guys. But, man, at scrimmage, they are just not equipped, and they've been fumbling, turning the ball over, and they're not good enough to withstand that. And it's ugly. It's ugly right now.
Yeah. Their left tackle, I will say, is a good player, but there's only so much one really good offensive lineman can do, right? You can only do – if it was a 5-star quarterback that was a future first-round pick, it would be different. But, Dave, it's just – it's tough. And I just wonder how much longer Pat wants to do this. He's been doing it for a long time, and he's done it, you know, probably the last couple of years at a pretty fairly consistent level. But it just looks like it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
You're talking about Peter Skoronski, right?
I am. What a great last name.
He's got to be related to Bob Skoronski, isn't he? The grandson or something?
I don't know. Skoronski's a pretty popular name in Illinois, I think. It's like Smith everywhere else.
You got a point. There's lots of there's lots of processed meat factories and stuff where Skoronski's work. I don't know how he did it all this time, really. I mean, this is his 17th season there. You remember when we used to go to Chicago and he was this peppery young guy? And
he doesn't look, he's not as peppy anymore,
well,
man.
Actually, he was on Monday. You got to look at his press conference. I mean, there are people asking whether he was delusional on drugs because he came in very upbeat and we're right there. We're right on the, we're so close and they're not close, man. They're not close.
They just put, it was such a huge win against Nebraska, you know, one of the best teams in the country. To beat them the way they did, I think that I just think they expended too much energy.
Well, I guess you can take happiness in providing happiness to Nebraska fans, doing their part to put an end to that regime. And I know the Cornhusker fans are basking in the glow of Scott Frost's dismissal this bye week. So Northwestern did its part to get that done. But there's no excuse for Penn State not to just scramble this team on Saturday, no matter what the weather is, which I guess is going to be kind of ugly.
Scramble their eggs. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It looks like Northwestern can do a couple things well, but to lose three games in a row like that at home, it's you know, they used to be really, really tough and close games. You know what I mean? They could play with just about anyone, keep it close in the fourth quarter and win their share. But this, to lose three in a row to these outfits is a sign of maybe like what you said. You can only do so much with duct tape and two stars and three stars anymore.
They won that division two of the last 4 years. That's the amazing part. They won it in 18 and 20, but they were last the other 2 years. They look like they're going to be last again this year if Nebraska's got such an easy schedule. They've got a very, very simple schedule. They do. I mean, they could easily. And the problem is that Northwestern, they got a tough draw. I mean, they got at Maryland, Ohio State, and Penn State out of the East. It's not as easy. They might not win a game the rest of the year. They might not.
Ooh, Pat's a good guy. Hell of a linebacker at Northwestern. I know you covered Penn State when Northwestern played. You wrote a lot about the Rose Bowl that they almost beat USC in but couldn't. But that was a magical year. But, yeah, he's a big part. One of the most famous Northwestern alums, wouldn't you say? If not, he's got to be on the very short list.
That was such a titanic accomplishment. I mean, if you had to name, and you're as much of a college football fan as I am, if you had to name the most amazing accomplishments in the history of college, the modern history of college football, what would you say? You know, Snyder at Kansas State, maybe. Turning that thing around, they were pathetic in the 80s, and Bill Snyder turned that around with a lot of JUCOs, but he did it and turned them into a really competitive team. I believe they beat Nebraska 1 year, didn't they, in a very pivotal situation?
Yeah, Nebraska had their number, and then once they had Michael Bishop at quarterback and
Michael Bishop, yeah.
They were formidable, not only against Nebraska. They were really, really good. They had a chance, I think, to do something even greater. And I think they lost the Big 12 title game in a game they were favored to win, or they could.
Yeah, I think it was 97. 97, they ended up in the Alamo Bowl playing Purdue with Billy Dicken as the quarterback. Drew Brees was on the bench, and they were like number four in the country when they played Purdue that way that year. But anyway, you'd say Snyder with Kansas State. I would say Greg Schiano with Rutgers the first time around. I mean, that was the worst team in college football. The worst team in college football when Terry Shea was there. I mean, when he took that thing over in 01, they were at the bottom of the entire heap. And within 5 years, they were top 10 in the country. They were number six in the nation in mid-November going to Cincinnati. And I think they got beat by Brian Kelly when he was the coach at Cincinnati in there. And that derailed a season where, you know, they could have conceivably actually played in the BCS national championship game. So that would be two. But the other, the third has to be Gary Barnett at Northwestern, which had been just a punching bag. And I don't mean for years. I mean for decades. Harrisburg favorite son, Denny Green, went in there, and it was just a toxic waste dump. And he got them to 3-7-1 in, I think, I forget, ninth in the 80s, 3-7-1, and was voted Big Ten Coach of the Year for that. That's how bad it was. So Barnett came in there from Colorado with a very good staff. Ron Vanderlinden was the defensive coordinator. And that was a miracle worker. I mean, that was a miracle work. And they all of a sudden in 94, remember they came in and played that Penn State team that was undefeated. They got routed like everyone got routed by that Penn State team. But I remember they had 30 first downs in Beaver Stadium. I'm thinking, this is a well-coached team. You know, they are functional. And then the next year, lo and behold, Penn State goes in there and they've lost a game, and Northwestern has upset Notre Dame. They've upset Michigan. They didn't have to play Ohio State. And that was the game. It was a bitter cold day. Dyke Stadium, as it used to be called back then, had never been filled. It had never been filled. I mean, in my memory, and it was like the middle of November, it's ABC, Brent Musburger's doing the game. And it had been so long since anyone had been in the seats where the scoreboard was that they didn't plan on it. And people were standing and obstructing the scoreboard numbers because no one ever sat in those seats. And Pat Fitzgerald was the middle linebacker. They won the game 21-10. And that was the key component in them getting to the Rose Bowl. They actually did what Gary Barnett said he was going to do, for which he was laughed at. He said he was going to take the purple to Pasadena, and they did. And they went and lost to Keyshawn Johnson in a wonderful, wonderful Rose Bowl, probably until the USC-Texas Rose Bowl in 05, I think the most entertaining Rose Bowl that's ever been, but they lost. But it was an incredible, incredible accomplishment. Pat is from that accomplishment. He didn't get to play in that Rose Bowl game because he ripped up his knee the last game of the season. You know, when you talk about replacing him, well, what's your next idea? This guy is the Scott Frost that worked, that went back to his alma mater and got it going and has been very respectable, thought of as maybe the best coach with little to work with, especially in the league for years and years and years. It's easy to be Ryan Day or Jim Harbaugh or James Franklin, for that matter, a lot tougher to be Pat Fitzgerald. So, you know, we all like him. We all wish him well, but man, he's in a bad way.
Yeah. And I mean, I just wonder if maybe he's a little bit, you said 17 years. At some point, there is such a thing as getting a little bit burned out. And I didn't know if maybe he was at that point, but you said he was all fired up on Monday. So who knows? They've had some pretty bad starts to seasons before, but I can't remember one non-conference wise quite like this, where they just, maybe Duke is pretty good, or maybe they're not that bad. But the other two teams, I don't know, man. I just thought that was bad.
Well, they lost all of their non-conference games in 2018 and then won the Big Ten West. It's not unprecedented. They lost to Duke and Akron and Notre Dame that year. So it's possible, I suppose.
Yeah, it is possible. And after they upset Penn State, we're going to be kicking ourselves, Dave. They're 25.5-point underdogs. You look at what each side has. I wanted to ask you a little bit about what do you think about Penn State's running game and the fact that it's just been a weird year, right? After the Auburn game, I would have said, man, Nick Singleton just looks like he is ready to be one of the faces of college football this year, even as a true freshman. We've seen very little from Kevon Lee. And now Katron Allen, who is now 20 pounds lighter, was clearly their best back against Central Michigan and really bailed them out a little bit. So it's nice to have all those options, but you just wonder, is there ever going to be one guy that emerges in October and November? Or is it just going to be, hey, we're going to play the hot hand. They're all talented. We're just going to wait to see which one steps up on game day.
Now, we had kind of a little debate in the press box. We'll give you a little inside baseball, fans, that I just didn't think Singleton looked right. I thought he was bouncing runs too much rather than hitting the holes. And I thought Katron Allen just looked better. You thought at the time that Singleton just wasn't getting blocking. He wasn't getting blocking, but that's part of Allen's gift, is that he is willing to duck into crevices and power through them. And I don't know that Singleton is. Is that the way you saw it in retrospect? I'm sure you went and looked at the tape.
Well, you know, you just wonder, you know, Dave, you kind of wonder if you just look at Singleton and Catron Allen. Like, Catron Allen played at IMG. I think they probably played against some decent competition. You know, when Singleton was at Governor Mifflin, I don't know how many times he had to actually stick his nose in there, you know, like a hunting dog rooting out for truffles or something like that, looking for a hole and kind of finding it. I just think that, you know, he was just faster than just about everyone.
I don't believe I've ever heard that metaphor.
Yeah, you can use it. You can use it. Sniffing around, burrow in. But anyway, I think that maybe that's something he's going to need to learn. But if the Lions get him in space, you know, you saw Auburn's team speed didn't really matter. You know, he's a special guy. But I think the whole key with him is they got to get him past the line of scrimmage. Whereas Catron, like you said, he doesn't have a tackle. He doesn't have a carry for loss this year. He can get 2 or 3 yards for sure. And then sometimes he had a couple of 30-yard runs against Central Michigan. One was called back. So I don't really know what to make of this running back room, because I like Kevon Lee a lot coming into the year as well. And he barely plays. So I don't know what's going on. Well,
Lee clearly doesn't have the burst of the other two guys. So there's that. And I you would have to assume, I don't think, has anyone asked Franklin whether that's essentially, he wouldn't answer you anyway. So I think that is the answer to his lack of playing time, assuming there's nothing wrong with it. I don't think there's anything wrong with him. But the pattern so far, I think, might be reversed from what it should be. Usually you have a power back. Hassan Haskins, for instance, last year would start the game and soften up the defense. And then Blake Corum would come in, the little race car, the speed racer, and hit the edge, and the defense is a little tired in the second quarter, and zoom. So up to this point, Singleton has started with Allen being the changeup back. Maybe we reverse him. What do you think of that?
It makes sense to me. I also think that Catron is the guy. I think inside the 10-yard line, he's the guy when the defense is condensed. I think he's most equipped right now to be the guy that if it's third and goal from the 2-yard line, and you line up under center, I think he's probably the guy I would want behind Clifford and not Nick Singleton. Now, there's nothing wrong with Nick Singleton's talents, but I think he's still learning maybe how to be an inside and outside runner, whereas Catron, I think, is their best inside runner right now.
You know, there've been a lot of backs who turned out to be great inside runners. When they first came into college football, I remember LaShawn McCoy, his first year at Pittsburgh, and not really liking to run inside like that. He had to learn it. And I actually mentioned that to him in an interview one time at the Eagles facility, and he got a little bit pissed off. He said, I saw it, man. I mean, you didn't initially like to. The point I was trying to make is you have to learn how to run inside. I mean, both step-ups, both in the college and the NFL, because it's a steep step up in both cases. It can happen, but and Singleton's certainly big enough. He's 220. He's big enough to take the punishment. It's not an easy job.
As a Cowboy fan, Tony Dorsett had to learn that when he got to Dallas. That's another example of a guy.
Yeah, that's a really good call. Yeah.
And I thought that watching the Cowboys and Giants on Monday, I thought Barkley has gotten a lot better since he left Penn State at, you know, not trying to bounce everything. He's been a little bit more patient. And he had a nice touchdown run against the Cowboys that he cut back, but it started inside, and he kind of waited. And when he saw the hole, he was gone. But yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a feel for that, and I think that you also have to be ready to when you run inside, you got to be prepared to get hit. I mean, and that I think also takes some getting used to.
It's easy for us to say. I mean, who wants to get hit like that in there? It's. Especially by no, you have to kind of enjoy the contact. You kind of have to be a freak.
This is the Blue White Breakdown.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Everyone's journey is different, and we are honored to guide you to the best relationship with this incredible plant. Have questions? Google Curaleaf PA or stop by one of our 18 locations across the Commonwealth.
I am curious now. And also in retrospect, we still have not seen Drew Allar in important minutes in a game in doubt, other than at Purdue when he was forced to come in with Sean Clifford had cramps in his legs. Do you think we see it here against Northwestern?
I would imagine that they are going to go into the game with a plan to play Drew Allar in the second quarter. If by some chance it is 7-7 or 10-7, I don't know that they're going to stick to that plan. I just think that I do think they desperately want to play him as much as they can. But I think James is aware that he wants to feel a little bit more secure about where they are. I'm with you, Dave. I would like to see him play regardless, you know, because I don't think there's much of a downside. I mean, what's the worst case scenario if you say we're going to put him in 5 minutes into the second quarter? Like, they're not going to be down 21-3. Could they start slow? Yeah, but I think I know what you're saying. You know, it's one thing to put him in the third quarter up 3 touchdowns. It's another thing to give him a little bit more meaningful snaps when the other guys are pretty fresh and they're not dejected. And he looked good when he did it against Purdue. So maybe we will see that. I don't know that James is going to do that unless they're up double digits.
Yeah, what I was trying to say to him during the press conference, and, you know, very honestly, I was running the question by before we got him in the post game after the Central Michigan game. Like, how do I phrase this where he'll answer it? And everyone I asked said, he ain't going to answer it, which he didn't. But I'm trying to be empathetic of his situation. He does not want to blow a game or blow the confidence of his young prodigy because his offensive line is a little bit sketchy and he's not really mobile. He doesn't want him in there making a critical mistake in important minutes. On the other hand, man, I think these days it's the only way to learn, especially with a kid this good. You got to put him in maybe in a 10-7 game in the second quarter. And that's the only, especially against Northwestern, it's not like you're facing last year's Michigan front. You're not. This is the time to do it. They got a bye next week. You got to get everyone ready right now because it's going to be a tough stretch here coming up at Michigan, Minnesota, which you saw Minnesota, right, at Michigan State. I was having a couple of beers here locally with a guy named Raj Verma, who is a very well-connected Michigan State guy. He lives in Atlanta. And it's a situation where Mel Tucker has kind of put that he's put his own personality on that program of toughness, and Minnesota just went in there and out-toughed them. It was 31-0, 34-7, is that what it was? Ass kicking. It was 34-0 at one point, and it was just a front to back ass kicking at scrimmage, and both with Mo Ibrahim and Tanner Morgan looked terrific. Those two guys did not have good years last year. Ibrahim was out the first game with what, you know, it's an Achilles injury. You don't know if you're going to come back from that. He looks terrific. They've got a backup back that runs behind him, a changeup guy. And the other thing was Tanner Morgan just did not have his mojo going. And to your credit, you said that Kirk Ciarrocca would revitalize him, and it really looks – he's the perfect RPO quarterback. I mean, he makes quick decisions. He knows that offense. He likes that offense. They seem to have good enough receivers who catch the ball. They lost their top wideout to injury, but they looked really good. I was impressed, like a very even division between pass and run. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. But I was amazed with how good Minnesota looked.
In a couple of weeks, that's going to be a really fun one to talk about all week with Ciarrocca, with PJ, with Tanner Morgan, with Mo, the running back, and the fact that they are ready for a street fight in any game they want to play, and that they're not going to back down. That they're a physical team, and that'll be fun to talk about that because it looks like with the schedule they have, they should be unbeaten coming into to Beaver Stadium.
They should be 7-0. And the point I was getting into is that's the game after they go to Michigan. So they're going to get softened up by these two badass bully ball teams. And then they got to play the fighter jets. It's a really, really, I can't remember a tougher stretch of three games on a Penn State schedule.
Anything else you picked up about Northwestern this week? I'm really excited to see this left tackle play from Northwestern. The reason I say that is, well, I am, because Penn State's defensive ends are off to a very good start, and it's not necessarily Adisa Isaac. It's Chop Robinson's off to a really, really good start. And also that freshman, Deni Dennis Sutton, he's a guy that's really going to help them at some point. He's got three sacks already, but two were in garbage time last week. I just think that's going to be a little bit of an education there. And I think that Penn State's ends are going to be up for the challenge. But I read some things about Northwestern and from talent evaluators, and they had tapes of Aiden Hutchinson in the Northwestern game last year, and he did some damage, but whenever they lined him up against Skoronski, it was no go, man. He did not do anything with this guy, and this is a really good player, and I think it's going to be a nice test for Penn State's edge guys, and I think they need it.
I think what we've seen of Manny Diaz, he's kind of like a mistake hitter. You know, a lot of great home run hitters in Major League Baseball, they get almost all of their big stats off of mediocre and not good pitchers. It's when they go up against the aces, it's a lot tougher for them. Usually the pitcher wins. And Manny, I think, has very much taken advantage of you saw the Richardson kid from Central Michigan. He was picking them apart a little bit, whereas Finley from Auburn, you could tell Manny had no respect for either one of those guys. Helinski is kind of in between the Northwestern quarterback. He was a stud recruit at South Carolina, started 11 games for them there, basically was kind of a washout on a bad team. He's had a really tough go of it with his brother was the Washington State quarterback who committed suicide. And it's been a really heart-wrenching, tragic kind of stretch right there. And you could understand how anyone would be thrown for a loop. He came to Northwestern. He wasn't good at first. I've seen stretches of him, especially in the Nebraska game, in this last game against Miami of Ohio, who, by the way, was playing their backup quarterback. Their starter is Blaine Gabbert's little brother, and he's good, Brett Gabbert, but he got injured. So Miami beat them with their backup quarterback, man, who completed like eight passes the whole game. And that ain't good. So Miami ran, you know, to your point, Miami ran the ball when they needed to run the ball. They busted a 66-yard run at the end of the game for the winning touchdown. It set up the winning touchdown where a Northwestern kid on the edge just whiffed. You were talking about a Mac tailback, okay? Just whiffed. That's what they have defensively. They're not good defensively. You saw them against Nebraska, I think.
Yeah, you keep bringing that up, but it's fair. It's fair, Dave. It's all fair. They were the much better team against Nebraska the final 20 minutes of that game. Whenever Nebraska went up at 11 and they tried that onside kick, Northwestern was clearly the better team, and that's very disheartening to me. But your point, they look like a team that might be able to upset a couple people in the Big Ten West off of that game. But the reality is that Nebraska just stunk that much, and now it's just been a real struggle for Northwestern to find its footing.
What I'm telling you is they have tools offensively. They've got Evan Hall is a very good little back. He could play for Penn State. Cam Porter is a good changeup back. They've got running backs, and I think Helinski has skills. He can fling the ball. They've got the left tackle, Skoronski, you're talking about. They will try to run the ball, but, man, they can't stop anybody, and Penn State should just meat grind these guys and play their whole offense, but it could rain up there. You've got to be able to run on these guys. If Miami of Ohio can run on them when it matters, you should be able to run on them. And to me, this is a prove-it game for Penn State's running attack.
All right, just to be clear, Dave, how many carries a game is Hall getting in the Penn State running back rotation with those two freshmen?
He's a change-up back.
Okay. I was just curious.
He's a little bumper car.
I know. He leads the team in receptions. I know that he's a very, very invaluable, right?
He plays. He's a good little back. He's tough. He's kind of bullet bodied, fire hydrant body, but quicker than you think. So he's not to be discounted. What I'm saying is, offensively, they have tools. Defensively, boy. Yeah, I mean, even Nebraska was like running up and down the field on them. They just shot themselves in the foot the whole time. So there's no excuse not to really move the ball on these guys.
All right, Davey, you know what time is. Give me your pick, maybe one key you're going to be watching for, and then I will do the same.
I will say Penn State 38-14. And it's kind of problematic whether Hurricane Ian remnants are going to be an effect here or not. But that would, of course, you know, affect both teams' game plan. I think it's going to be kind of raw and cloudy and maybe rainy up there. But I want to see Penn State run the ball and run it effectively against these guys. If they can't do that against these guys, you know, it's a red flag. It's a red flag against Michigan.
Dave, I need a bonus prediction from you. Will we see Drew Aller midway through the second quarter or not?
No.
Okay. All right.
I got to go with what James Franklin's pattern has been, which is, you know, if they get ahead by two or three touchdowns, yes. But if they don't, no. And that's the key point to me. They should play them whether they're ahead or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually picked, 38-7. So we see Penn State around the same point total. We'll see how Northwestern does up there. I wanted to say, boy, if Penn State doesn't really grab this game by the throat, Northwestern could hang around. But then the more I looked at what Northwestern had done the last 3 weeks and who had done it to them, they don't have the depth and the athletes really, I think, to really, really, if Penn State somehow turns it over three or four times, penalties and stuff like that. But I just don't know, even if all that happens, I don't know if they can stay within three touchdowns of Penn State. So I think 38-7, you have Northwestern covering though, so that's interesting to me.
Oh, it's probably a backdoor cover is what I'm thinking. I mean, this should not be a game.
All right, Penn State fans, that's it. We talked about Fitzgerald. We talked about Gary Barnett. We talked about the 95 Northwestern team. We brought up Nebraska's season opening loss to Northwestern, so that was super. But we also talked about Drew Aller and the gauntlet that Penn State's got to run once they get past this game in the bye week. It's going to get real interesting, I think. And Dave, I know you agree, for Penn State.
This is kind of like the industrial film where they review when you're in school, review what we've seen. And give you a chance to write down the outline, you know? Okay.
It's in summation. I always like to give a little summation. I'm going to see if you can talk about Nebraska losing in every podcast. Like, so far, you're like six for your last six, so I like
it. I got to get this in. I did talk about the new coach. Before we leave, do you have a thought on other than Bill O'Brien, on the new coach? Because I put in a new name. Did you see the new name I put in?
I didn't. I mean, I know you're a big Leipold guy. I know Campbell's been another guy that's been floating around. I just don't know about Billy O in Lincoln, Nebraska. So who is the new name? I didn't see it.
What about Charles Huff?
Okay.
A jolt of personality. I mean, I guarantee you if he gets an interview, he'll knock it out of the park. And they've never had anybody with personality at that place. I mean, back to Osborne. Pelini had a personality, but not one you'd want to be around.
How dare you say Bill Callahan didn't have a personality, Dave?
I just think, and they've never had a black coach either, except for the guy they have now as an interim coach. I think they could really use a dose of Charles Huff, who could be, he's a buoyant, fun guy, interesting guy, and clearly a hell of a coach. I mean, if you've done what he's done already at Marshall. I just think that would be an interesting interview.
All right. We'll see. On that Nebraska note, we will conclude this Penn State podcast. Dave, I will see you up there on Saturday. Drive safe. I'll try and do the same. And then it's on to the bye week.
This has been the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.